Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Fighting Words on the Fighting Words News Network. Fighting Words is brought to you each and every day of the week in grateful appreciation to the men and women of the United States Armed Forces and the men and women of Police and Fire Services by Dr. Kathleen Carroll, a board-certified psychiatrist in private practice since 2003. Dr. Carroll previously was the director of inpatient services at the Bay Pines VA Hospital and the Bay Pines VA Medical Center. Dr. Carroll specializes in the treatment of children 6 and older, and treatment of adults. In other words, from the womb to the tomb. She's also an all-time triathlete. She's been there. She's broken records. She is a world champion, and she knows how to help you get through to that next. When you hit that wall, she can help you get through that. If you're having any problems with life, please see a professional. Please don't take it out on your neighbors. Don't take it out on the police or firemen. Or anybody in uniform. These are very, very tough times for everybody in uniform. So please, if you're having any difficulty, please see somebody and have it taken care of. Well, guys, it's good to be back on with you. Bob, I know we got a lot to talk about and see. I know you just got done in the gym and you need a refresher, but we need to. I got some real stuff I got want to find out about. Let's start out with Deontay Wilder and Luis Ortiz. Supposed to be a rematch in December. Is that going to happen, Z?
Well, it's possible. It's quite possible. Really, Deontay Wilder is sort of, you know, he's, as far as the big fight with Anthony Joshua, that's kind of off now. So, and Tyson Fury at this moment is not directly going to fight Deontay Wilder, which leaves Deontay
right.
a little bit in limbo. And being as though he's in limbo and Luis Ortiz is a viable opponent, and Luis Ortiz, since the first Deontay fight, has shown a bit of slippage in age catching up to him, it would be really, there's no other direction that I could see for Deontay Wilder. Maybe Kalnacki, maybe I mean, really, there are no other names up there outside of Joshua and Fury that he could really make money off of. So, I mean,
right.
as far as Luis Ortiz, it's possible because it's really the only, you know, viable opponent as far as any major dividends.
So,
I mean, that's
Earlier in the week, the trades had said that they thought that there was a contract for a rematch. With Tyson Fury and Deontay Wilder for February 22nd in Vegas. But I haven't been able to confirm that anywhere. I don't know whether you had seen that or what your thoughts on that one would be.
Well, they're going to continue. They're continued talks. They're going to continue talking until something is I'm going to say, until the fight is big, until they can actually, get maybe a venue, get some backing, just something to make the fight basically, just build up big. And right now, Deontay has to get a little busier, to be honest. He has fought since the Fury fight. He's fought Anthony Brazil, and that was just that went fast. And he right now, to me, he needs rounds. He needs to get rounds. Tyson Fury's trying to stay busy. He had two fights since, and this is the second fight since the Deontay fight. So Wilder, he needs to he's going to need an opponent soon, and preferably a big guy, because if he's talking about fighting Tyson Fury, you want to start preparing for that, size again, and get yourself used to that again. And as though y'all fought each other, y'all know a bit about each other, then. I mean, you want to get more accustomed to what he has and the tools he has. You're not going to find anybody, big or small, with the tools Tyson Fury has and with that heaviness. But you need to see that size. You need to fight something, comparable to the size, just to get used to, just to keep, keep alert with that. If that's your goal in mind, keep alert with that. You're looking to fight. I mean, your two major fights, maybe a Ruiz fight. Depending how this fight goes with Joshua, you might be looking at Ruiz. But, I mean, really right now, you're still kind of lined up as far as you, Fury, and right now Joshua in a third, position in the heavyweight division. They're not we'll see what happens with Ruiz. He might launch up to that third position. But as of now, Joshua, even with that launch, he's still thought of a little better than Ruiz. So. He's thought about in that third heavyweight tier. I mean.
Okay, good. All right, now I gave Bob some breathing room because I know he's been huffing and puffing waiting for this next question. The UFC 241.
And the new
Cormier.
Heavyweight championship.
Yeah.
DC, I don't know why. I just have never really been able to get behind him. I think he came out looking flabby as ever. not training as hard as he did for the first time they met. I honestly think after this he's going to retire, but wasn't hugely impressed with Miocic either. He was going out there for two rounds just throwing jab cross, jab cross. And, like, I don't – man, the only people that attack you head-on are drunk. You know what I mean? You got to cut some angles. You got to get in there. And Stipe, until the third round, we started throwing those body shots. It just, you know, underrated body shot, get those arms to come down. And then, yeah, he put DC to sleep. You know, it's I mean, I liked it, but then again, I always, you know, kind of feel bad when you see that guy sitting there, because there's a good 30 seconds to a minute where they don't know where they're at. You know what I mean? You can see that in his eyes, too. He had no idea. He was glazed over. I didn't get the whole report, but there was a, you know, something about why did Rogan interview DC afterwards? Because he was a good champ. I mean, the guy, you can't take anything away from him. I mean, phenomenal wrestler, did it on a couple different levels. It's just, to me, he was, you know, his whole career was like a less fit, who am I going with here? I'm brain farting. Guy out of Canada that did, you know, all the wrestling, GSP, okay? So GSP at least had a following, you know, but he was a very smart fighter. He'd go out and get the win. It was never exciting. He'd just sit on people. And to me, DC was just a heavier version of that. So I like seeing Miocic back on top. Let's give it out for our firefighters out there, because I'm pretty sure he's a firefighter, and that's just cool, you know?
Yeah. But yeah, he did have the crowd on their feet at that in that third round, because he just pummeled Cormier, and then he even took him to an overhead drop down, and it was you know, the crowd was just going wild.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, everyone loves the come from behind, the Cinderella story.
Oh, sure.
You know, and then also DC. I mean, he's a phenomenal wrestler. He picked up Miocic like he was nothing. But then he just held on to him for a minute. Was that a little too WWE for me? I think so. But, you know, maybe thinking where he wanted to drop him, I get it. But, you know, have a plan. You know, if you're going to shoot in and pick somebody up, have a game plan. You know, don't just, oh, look, I got him. I'm gonna take a couple steps around the ring. But, yeah, overall, I'm happy with the results, and I really will put that out there that I really think DC is going to retire after this. But he had a good career. He did well. Nothing against him. He's made the money. Go out on top. Go out safe. You're not slurring your words. There's no, you know, hardly any TBI. Yeah, take it and go.
Yeah, I agree with everything you said, Bob. One thing I'm going to say is this, though. I did see what seemed to be not the best version of both fighters. Cormier, he's getting older, and you saw the age. Also saw that with Stipe. Stipe's, what, 36? I saw age creeping up on Stipe, too. He's not as reactive as he was, used to be, as far as moving out of the way of punches. I seen Stipe closely get outboxed for two rounds by Daniel Cormier. And Cormier should not have been totally trying to box Stipe. It seemed like they signed a contract and said, all right, we're going to box it out. I mean, Cormier, he did get on top of Stipe in that first round a little bit, but it seemed that he was resigned to stand and box. Rare kicks from both men. But especially as the fight went on, rare kicks from both men. But it seemed they were resigned to sit and box it out. When you sit and box it out, if that's going to be the case, you're going with the guy who has that boxing amateur background, which is Stipe. Stipe has that boxing background. After a minute or two, when you're boxing a guy with a boxing background, he's going to find that boxing weakness, specifically just saying boxing, which Daniel was eating everything to the face.
Right.
Everything. Stipe was throwing. Now, that jab cross, although he was just throwing that, it was working. It was working. DC would turn off sometimes, but for the most part, he was catching DC. I mean, even maybe not the sharpest shots, but being caught is being caught still, especially with four-ounce gloves. So he was catching them. DC was eating everything to the face. So it seemed like he was like, you know what? I'm going to have to – he's eating everything to the face. I have to go somewhere else to, you know, maybe slow this guy down because he's having steady foot pressure, getting in, you know, doing some good boxing on me. Oh, man, he hit him with that first body shot, and you see that DC wanted to keep going forward, but his hand dropped, and it looked like his leg quivered a little bit. When I seen that, I said, uh-oh, if Stipe knows what I know, bang, oh, he knows what I know. He's going back to it. He kept going back to the body. It was just a matter of time before he just threw a few survives to the head because Danny was not going to block to the head anymore. He wasn't. He ceased to be on the attack, and he was trying to recover, and Stipe, he did the correct thing. He kept going to the body until the head totally opened up, and then he threw the few survives. Daniel, I think he should retire. And I think Stipe may have maybe one or two fights left. I'm afraid for Stipe if he sees Ngannou right now. Cormier shouldn't be getting at you. He's slick. He's a slick guy on the stand-up. He's slick experience. He has pretty good power. But as far as on the stand-up, he should not have been getting the Stipe like that in this fight. The first fight, Stipe kind of got set up. He kind of got drug into that. This fight... Stipe shouldn't have been getting touched. Doing what Stipe was doing, his reaction just didn't seem to be there. I mean, even when he hit Cormier, he couldn't move out of the way for the response. When Cormier led, he couldn't really stop a whole lot. And Ngannou, he's only going to need one. He's only going to need one. If not to get you out of there, to get the party started, to get you out of there. Stipe beat him last time basically by guile and out-wrestling him. But he had to come back from some things during that fight. He got rocked a time and two in that fight.
He wasn't slipping and coming off the counter. They were just exchanging, like they were having, okay, my turn and then your turn and then giving credit.
Exactly.
You know, I think they gave him credit for one of those, so technically he's only the second person next to John Jones that's ever got DC takedown. So that's cool. And then, but I did like it was very, I guess, unorthodox. I mean, the way, you know, Cormier, I mean, he's got that power, but he's just leaving both of his hands out, almost like an open high five, you know, and then trying to grab and then going with those short over the top jabs. And he was landing that, you know what I mean? And that's kind of clever, but then that's not a good for Stipe if you're getting hit with that kind of stuff. You know what I mean?
Exactly. And that's what scares me.
I'm sorry. I thought you were done. Go ahead. I just want to say we're joined by Dr. Chris.
Hey,
Dr. Chris.
Guys?
Are you guys talking about Cormier and Mikosik or Miosik?
Yep.
You know, I've been following Miosik. He's a big, long-bone guy. Never lifted weights. Got that big, just grew into that size. And he's a formidable opponent. And I thought, you know, I said, this guy took a bit off more than he wants to chew, Cormier. I said, he's got a lot of experience, but I don't think he can handle this big guy, this big, young, strong guy. Because he put some guys away that I didn't believe could be beaten, and Miosik knocked him silly. A couple of guys. So I watched part of that fight all the way up to where his eye got hurt real bad. Now, how did that fight end? Did it end in a TKO?
No, knockout, Dr. Chris. After about the third round, it was all pretty much the same first and second round. And then third round, Stipe came out and started throwing some left hooks to the body, you know, and those were stinging DC, making him wake up, and they kind of took their toll, throwing those good body shots, so his hands came down, and he ended up going in for a flurry and got the knockout. So
the knockout, okay. Well, Cormier is not that big a man to take on a guy that size. I think he overmatched himself. That guy's a rough character. He's out of Cleveland, that guy.
Yeah, Cormier, he's not a guy, and this is crazy because you have guys like that. I think you're one of those guys like that, Dr. Chris, having met you. You don't have guys that grow up. You don't have guys that grow out. You have guys that grow in. And and that are just, they grow in, and their density is like a black hole. You just, I mean, it's just, you know, these guys, they're not, they don't look big, but they're as solid as solid gets. Because you have guys who are blown up, muscle weightlifting guys who aren't dense or aren't strongly dense. Well, you have guys who are naturally just little lead balls. You know, you can't move a lead ball. When a lead ball gets moving in a direction, it's hard to stop it. That's kind of like Cormier.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, some of those guys out there just got really good genetics. You know what I mean? So they got, you know, they look great. They look like the Greek gods, but I try to, you know, I never achieve that, so I put it down. You know, that's what we do. If you don't like it, you just put it down. But so those six packs, like, you can just, you know, you can keep your six pack because that don't mean you can fight.
Yeah. Doesn't mean you can take a body shot. You hit a six pack and it's going to fold the same as a nine six pack. So.
Right.
That's right.
And the liver doesn't know that he's a six pack. So you get hit in the liver. Then you think you're going to die.
Oh, that's what happened to Cormier.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I do want to give credit,
hey, Bob,
though. I mean, going, you know, passing over real quick the co-main event, go down to the one before that. Because Paulo Costa came, I was really happy with those results against Yoel Romero. Yoel Romero is a beast, but you know he didn't perform. And Costa, man, he was talking like, you know, I'm gonna go in there undefeated. And I was surprised because, you know, we've talked about that before on the show that, you know, you're the second man introduced, you're the challenger, and you got to straight beat the person, you know. I don't know if it was completely unanimous. I probably would have gave, you know, maybe one judge go back and forth, maybe a split decision. But, you know, I was really happy with that outcome. And then jumping forward onto the co-main event. And the return of Nate Diaz, right? You gotta love that cat. I mean, wasn't a huge fan of his when he first started because I thought he was too much of a punk. It wasn't until about, you know, I think 4 or 6 years ago he came on TV and he's like, hey, that's part of my act. And I was like, wow, that's a really smart dude. He's selling that. You know what I mean? And him and his brother, they've got that, you know, we're the bad boys. But I hear really good things from the people out where they train. I mean, they take care of everyone in their gym and look out for them. And so I was really happy that he came back. And Nate, you know, man, you just look at the guy and you're like, oh, I'm going to walk over this dude. And he always comes through with some stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Nate, I like you.
Guys,
I was just gonna say, I like Nate's performance in the fact that Nate did what Nate always does, except for he was actually busier. Nate is gonna put foot pressure coming forward to you. Nate, he's gonna talk and put his, you know, shrug and all of that. He's gonna do that. A lot of times he'll do that and wait for you to throw. Or do that and not throw. He'll do a lot of bravado, and a lot of that's to catch a break during the fight, that, to be honest. A lot of that is just who he is. What I liked is that he did not give Pettis a break. He didn't give Pettis the space for Pettis to run off the cages and to do this and to do that. Pettis got some things off that he wanted, but during the fight, you can see it on Pettis' face like, man, this guy is not stopping.
No.
I'm doing this, I'm doing that, and he keeps throwing punches. He just keeps touching me.
Well, and Nate called it after the fight, too. He's like, you know, 3-5 versus 5-5. You know, I'm used to going the distance.
Yeah.
So I knew I had to pressure him. And that was really smart, good training camp, good coaching, stay on Pettis. Because Showtime needs space to do his spinny, whirly hoo-haws and all that kind of stuff. Now, I like Pettis, don't get me wrong. I mean, you know, he's got the kick heard around the world that will never go away. I mean, Diaz, I completely agree with you, Zito. I mean, he uses that chin. He taunts you. He wants you in because his arms are 3 to 4 inches longer than anybody else's. So he can counter like a beast. You know what I mean? You come in and you lean on that front foot and put some power behind something, you're in his area. He loves that.
Yeah.
Hey, well, Bob, let me ask you a question. There's a rumor floating out there that Nate Diaz would go against Jorge Masvidal. and it would be the largest pay-per-view that they've seen in UFC. First of all, do you think that would ever, that match would ever come? And the second question would be, who do you think would win that match?
Oh, that's a tough call. I mean, Jorge showing everything that he has shown recently would be amazing. But then again, you know, Nate's one of those guys, he will fight anybody. You know what I mean? So I'm not exactly sure of the weight difference, but I'm sure it'd be Nate that either went up or down to do it. Because Nate'll go down to Connor's weight. He'll do whatever it takes, and that's hard. And the one thing that, you know, a lot of people overlook about Nate and Nick Diaz is they're straight up legit black belts. I mean, they're good on the ground.
And they just like
to bang, man. They like that show, and they've got chins. Now, my only fear is Nate's developing a lot of scar tissue. So when he gets back into those five-minute rounds, if he takes enough shots, he's going to bleed. And you know, and saying we've talked about Forrest Griffin, you know what I mean? His early retirement, just because you got so much scar tissue in your face. And so you get a good striker against Nate that can connect. And they don't even got to hit hard. You just got to hit right around the eye socket.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, all that kind of – all the sharp bones there. Get a nice little cut going. And then you just, you know, exploit it. But yeah, I don't know about the biggest draw ever. I don't think they can pull more money than Connor or Ronda was, but I think that'd be a fantastic. I'd pay to see that.
Mm-hmm.
Nate was calling Khabib out. I know Nate was calling Khabib out.
Ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean that is probably more, Khabib has something lined up already, but I mean, Nate, I would like to see that fight. Now, I could predict, you know, maybe what could happen with, you know, but Nate is earned. Right now, Nate has, he's a popular guy. He has star quality. He has a very, very huge following. And he just beat Pettis. Nate is putting himself in line for a title shot.
He's putting himself in line.
And with that appeal, with that appeal in that fan base, that is, like, he can easily get it off of that. My fear for Nate is not only the scar tissue, it's the way Nate is talking. Nate, earlier in his career, was talking a lot more clear. We know he's a warrior. But every fight Nate's in is going to be a war. He's going to be a war. He's going to eat your shot to give his back. That's what he does. There's no getting around it, because that's what he wants to do. He wants to get in there. He wants to bang it out. Some guys need to get hit to feel that tear in the fight. Nate is that guy. With that, it comes along trauma, unfortunately. Now you have 4-ounce gloves, and every fight you're eating punches from a guy that's equal size to you. That's going to have an effect on the brain. So, and that's my only fear, that each and every fight is going to take a little more. Then it might be one fight that takes a lot more or take it all. That's my fear for Nate.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's almost like Chuck Liddell. You know, I mean, I haven't seen him in a lot of years, but, you know, he was always in there banging it up to the point where, you know, he did a commercial not too long ago, and I heard they had to do so many takes because he's punch drunk. You can't even understand what he's saying. You know what I mean? And that happens. I mean, after, you know, that's, I feel worse for boxers than I do MMA guys, because we can, you know, we can snap a joint or something like that. You guys take 90% of your shots to the head, you know, and so that's damn, you know, there's nowhere else to really hit except for the body, you know, and we got a bunch of different options. After you take so many shots, like, my wife swears I got TBI. That's a new thing or whatever, but whatever. You know, but you take enough shots, and then it doesn't help Nate. You know, he's slurring his words and then lighting up, you know, blunt or whatever right on the stage. I mean, come on. Like, that's not going to help you talk any better anyway.
Yeah, not the brain.
No.
Yeah. Hey, Chris, I got one for you now. We got Golovkin and Derevchenko have agreed to fight in October, October 5th in Vegas. What's your take on that fight?
Why are they fighting and not the other guy? Why did he go to that guy? Why did is he the logical contender against whatever happened to the other fighter? You know who I'm talking about, the Mexican
Canelo.
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 What happened
Canelo?
To him? Didn't want to fight anymore?
Canelo. Canelo is actually they're actually waiting for the result of the Kovalev Yardy fight. They're in talks with fighting Kovalev.
Yeah.
Canelo and Kovalev?
Yeah.
That's not a good thing, I don't think. I don't think that's a good thing. I think too much weight difference, too much size difference. You know, I said that when Bernard Hopkins tried Kovalev. Even though Kovalev has been softened a lot, I don't think Canelo belongs in a ring with him. He's just too damn big. I don't know how the hell he can overcome all that size. You know? Not a good thing to try. Why the hell don't Canelo fight somebody his size who picked ass for that fight? That guy's a heavy-handed guy. Even when he's not fighting good, he's throwing, you know, dynamite punches at you.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't like that match at all. I don't. Why the hell does he fight? The big money should be with Triple G. Why is he? What was his reason for going away from that? Was it his manager?
No, he actually feels a little personal about Triple G, and he doesn't want to give him any money. He doesn't want to do business with Triple G.
What?
He literally feels a little personal. Yeah, so.
What a dumbass. Well, I'd like Kovalev in that fight if it ever comes off. But now the other, I don't know a hell of a lot about
Derevchenko. He's a guy.
I don't know. I saw him one time and he wasn't impressive.
Yeah.
I don't think he belongs in a ring with Triple G. At his best, at Triple G's best. Yeah,
well,
I don't know.
What do you think?
I think you're right, Doc. I don't think he belongs in with Triple G at his best. But if Triple G gets a slight increase in age, we'll know it. Derevchenko will show us. Derevchenko is not a pushover. He's a proven fighter. He lost to Danny Jacobs. If you remember, that's probably where you remember. He put up a good performance, but he lost to Danny Jacobs. He was slighted. They were in negotiations for him, for Derevchenko, to fight Canelo. But Canelo's more or less staring towards Kovalev. With Golovkin and Derevchenko, Golovkin... I don't see him knocking Derevchenko out. I just see, like, if Derevchenko needs to control the fight a bit more. He needs to really, I mean, because he has the skills to win. He has the skills to win. He has very good foot movement. He doesn't necessarily need to fight inside all the time. And he throws very good combinations. He's going to have a problem with Golovkin's experience, I'm going to say. More ring experience, more professional experience.
Mm-hmm.
But Derevchenko has a hand speed advantage, foot speed advantage. He's not, like, dimension-wise, Golovkin's bigger. He's taller than Derevchenko. Probably a little naturally a heavier man. Although Derevchenko shows out as a good middleweight. Golovkin, he's a pretty sizable middleweight. As far as just his business, it's not going to be an easy fight. It's not going to be an easy fight. And if Golovkin, if he gets any age slippage, this is one he can easily give away.
Well,
based off of his last form, I picked him.
I picked the love one.
When's the fight coming off? I didn't hear.
That's October 5th in Vegas.
Oh, well, that's not that far
off. This weekend we have Sergey Kovalev versus Anthony Yarde.
Yeah.
I guess, Z, let's start with you. What's your thoughts on that one?
If Kovalev is old or shows any slippage, we'll know. Yarde is not on Kovalev's level, but what Yarde is, he's young, he's fresh, and he's strong. And that could give anybody problems, especially Kovalev, if he can't fight the pace for the way he wants. Yardy's capable of making him not fight that way. I just don't think Yarde is good enough to really offset a whole lot of what Kovalev wants to do, more or less wants to do. Yardy's not going to put balls-to-the-wall pressure on Kovalev. He's not going to cut the space. He's not going to do a lot of what Andre Ward did, a lot of what Alvarez started to do with Kovalev. You start timing him, start cutting his space off. You don't let Kovalev operate where he wants to operate. That's the reason why I don't think Canelo should fight Kovalev. Just more than the size, just the power and the range. It's a bad style matchup, I think. But for Yarde, I think it's a terrible style matchup. He's a big, fresh, young guy. Who would bring the fight. Depending how he brings the fight, he can make it rough for Kovalev. I don't think he's good enough to beat Kovalev. But if we see any slippage in Kovalev, any age slippage, any boxing deterioration, we'll know. We'll know, because then it'll be a much more difficult fight than it should be.
Bob?
Yeah.
You have anything on that one?
Yeah, Triple G's, I'm doing, looking him up, from trying to follow him. He's from Kazakhstan. I had a fight over there, or I was supposed to fight over there once, so I got, the only thing I was ever taught was post-moltri na minya bolshoi zadrovi. Look at me, I'm big and strong. It was to pick up chicks. That's all I got to say to him. I hope it means that. I wish him the best of luck. Enjoy Vegas. It's got to be prettier than Kazakhstan.
Oh yeah.
Conor McGregor has decided he has a new training camp. He just beats up old guys in a bar because they don't like his whiskey.
Oh. Yeah, right.
And now I see that. All the Irish bars have sent back whatever they had in stock to McGregor.
Oh, that's
they're not going to service.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be very expensive. Yep.
Oh yeah. Well, yep. We know what he'll be doing the next couple of years is just drinking his whiskey. You know.
Hey, Z, what do you think about Alexander Usyk coming back on the 12th? For a fight. Z?
I got one for you, Frank. How did you like Amir Khan against Crawford? What did you think of that?
Ooh.
That fight. He found out that he couldn't outbox Crawford. And I think he was looking for the exit door. You know?
Yeah.
Crawford
yep.
made him look bad.
Yeah.
I mean, Crawford looked awful good to me when he was in there. And then, you know, that punch. You could recover from that. He could have gone
sure.
on, but he didn't want to. When you get the hell out
yeah.
of there. But he was getting outboxed. Even he said after the fight, I've never been outboxed till the night. He said, I've been out punched, but I've never been out boxed. Now I got out boxed.
Mm-hmm.
Time to go home.
Yeah.
You know? But I thought
yeah.
it was a good fight while it lasted. I was hoping it would go to go all the way out, go a little further so I could see, just to see the difference in the two guys. But I was kind of disappointed when the ref let that, called it. But it was good while it lasted anyway. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And I got one. What's going to happen to this new welterweight? That he's a lightweight or welterweight. He's a tremendous puncher. I've only seen him once, but he looks awful good. And he's starting to get a lot of play. I think he's a Puerto Rican fighter. You know what I'm talking about? He's probably a lightweight, but he looks awful good. Looks like he's going to be a problem for anybody, even including Lomachenko, as good as he looked the other night. Next time, I'm going to make it a point to remember his name. He just came on the picture the last couple of months.
Like he didn't need to be in the ring with Crawford in anything.
Is he that big, that kid?
Hello?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Hello?
Yes. Go ahead, Kurt. Go ahead, Z.
Oh, I'm sorry. You were talking about Crawford and Khan?
Yeah, that was a lousy. I didn't like the way it ended. I think Khan was looking for the exit door.
Well, he got it. he got the exit door. And it's appropriate that the decision was rendered that way. Although, it could have taken the 5 minutes and they could have had, something technical maybe. It might have been, it would have looked a little better. But to be honest, Khan was on his way out. And it started early. Once you get Khan's timing down, or once you gauge his speed, either one of the two, then he's easy for the picking. He's easy for the picking. All that physical talent, and his brain doesn't exactly run. He doesn't put it all together in his head. He could put a combination together. But the problem is he's always throwing in combinations. Khan doesn't pop shot. All that speed, and he doesn't set it up. He doesn't set the hard shots up. You don't fight. And that's one thing when I'm like, and I tell fighters in the gym, you fight with a purpose. And what's the purpose? You're trying to land the hardest shots you can. A lot of times you have to throw away shots to land that hard shot. Khan doesn't do that. He doesn't throw a fast 1-2 and then come across with a hard 3 most of the time. He might do that. He'll rip to the body when he's comfortable. But he's not, when you're in there, if you throw a punch, that's a risk. So I can't say he's not a risk taker, not the biggest risk taker. He's always, when he throws punches, it's always in mind that he's going to get punched back. That's the thing. You're supposed to do that, but you're not supposed to act that way. You're supposed to have a better poker body. Khan fights so frantic and nervous that he doesn't hide anything. So, you know what you're doing to him. You know what affects him because he'll show you. And just, as a fighter, you want to kind of not reveal a whole bunch.
Okay.
Good point. Good point. I like that.
Let me ask you, another thing came out in the trades this week was that Earl Spence wants to take on Manny Pacquiao after the Sean Porter fight. I guess I got to get some direction on that one because I just don't see it. Z, what's your thoughts?
I see it. I see that as the next logical step. If he beats Sean Porter, Pacquiao's part of PBC. He's part of PBC. They're going to be the two biggest names. So that's really the next logical step. Right now, though, he needs to worry about beating Sean Porter because that is absolutely not guaranteed. Spence, he's looking like the hotter fighter, the more, he's hotter right now. Looks like the more momentum fighter. But Sean Porter is the more proven fighter. And he's not over the hill. He's not at an age. Sean Porter's a rough fighter. I'm not exactly sure if I could describe all of his fights as wars as much as car accidents. Sean Porter is a contact fighter, not an impact fighter. Impact is damaging. Contact is just always there touching you, just always there bumping you, pushing you, pushing punches on you, elbowing you, headbutting. He's just punching you low. He's a contact fighter. He's always doing something physically to you. So I mean, he's not, as I say, he's not a war-torn fighter. Well, he takes shots, but he's not taking as many shots as you think, especially on the end of punches, because Sean Porter tends to be in people's chest, just pushing punches and pushing them up on the ropes. And out. I mean, that's what he does. So you have to worry about him in a fight. And he showed some propensity for outside boxing skills. Errol Spence has to worry about that. Now, even after that, what's going on after the fight with you fought Sean Porter? Pacquiao, you hope he slows down. You hope he slowed down enough to where you could take advantage of that, because Pacquiao is also a very, very good fighter right now still. So what I don't like is that Keith was able to step to – what I don't like about this is Keith was able to step to Pacquiao and kind of not bring it – try. You know, he was successful in punch of bringing it downhill on Pacquiao with, as far as laying – putting his power on Pacquiao, laying some punches on him. Keith Thurman, with his physical his durability, was able to do that to Pacquiao. That's not even his game. Errol Spence is a more durable fighter who his whole game is to bring it downhill. That could affect Pacquiao a little worse.
Chris,
if I were Pacquiao, I would think about staying the hell away from Spence, getting an easier opponent, and then I'd pack it in. And I think he's used up all his luck. I mean, he just can't go on like this. How the hell can you continue at his age and his size to do what he's doing? He shocks me every time he wins. But I think he's about that stage. He should go out in a good, you know, the last hurrah should be a good one because he deserves it. But I don't think Spence, I don't know if he's strong enough to overcome Spence and Spence's body attack. I think Spence is one hell of a fighter, and he puts pressure on. He makes you fight, you know, three minutes of every round. He doesn't give you a breather.
Great.
And he's just as strong in the 10th as he was in the first. So that's not all that's not good for Pacquiao, not at age 40.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens. You know, I don't know if the fight will ever come off.
Yeah, here's another dream fight to. Is a dreamer. Adrian Broner is calling out Canelo Alvarez and Triple G, and said they won't even talk to him, but he wants to call him out and see if they'll take him on. Z, what's your thoughts on that one?
Last I heard about Adrian Broner, he said, if I'm a middleweight, even thinking about going to light heavyweight, I'm not talking to Adrian Broner either about a fight. So that's just talk. But last I heard about Broner, he said he's staying at 140. He's tired of fighting the big guy. he said anybody wants to see him, they got to see him at 140. And I agree with that totally. But then I'm the one who said, oh, why are you seeing the big guys? There's a reason why you keep seeing the big guys. Oh, it's your training. Cause you're not training all the ways to be down at 140. You know what I mean? You train and you consistently at 140, well, then everybody will see you at 140. But he comes in heavy. He blows up in between fights. I mean, he's, you know, he catch weight in this guy from welterweight. No, come on, man. You dedicate the 140, then everybody will see you there, but you're not dedicated at 140. That's why you're tired of seeing the big guy.
And who the hell is he doing? Have you ever done to justify a bout with Triple G or Canelo? What the hell has he ever done to justify that? You can call out, you can call all you want, you know. When you're out in the woods, nobody's interested you out there, you know. Nobody can hear you. I'd laugh at it. If I was a middleweight, I'd laugh at it. I wouldn't even give him the time of day, dumbass, you know.
Okay, the other thing that came out this week that I thought was laughable was that Devin Farmer is insulted by a $2 million offer to fight Gervonta Davis. Z, what's your thoughts?
he might. I mean, I don't know what Tevin Farmer thinks he's worth right now. $2 million to fight Davis is, doesn't sound that bad to me, to be honest.
Yeah,
if you're Tevin Farmer, I mean, what are you gonna make fighting anybody else? You're certainly not gonna make $2,000. You're not gonna make $2 million. So I mean,
right.
If that's really, do you feel that you're ready for a tag? I mean, I think, well, you're an experienced. You have amateur background. You've been in the pros for a minute. So you know your worth. I don't know if he wants to see Tank. A lot of times, that's a pull. Oh, $2 million. You're assaulting me. Yeah, when you're making what? Maybe your biggest fight might have been 80, 90,000. I don't even think Tevin might have made 100,000 on what?
Mm-hmm.
On, I mean, that's what I mean. You're getting offered $2 million. Now, are you moving up to fight him? Is it a health risk? I mean, because if you're moving up to fight him, yeah, you could take that into consideration. Well, $2 million is a lot, but, you know, that's putting my health at risk, really. That's different if you're moving unnatural to where you fight at, or unnatural to your weight. But, I mean, from what I recall, Tevin Farmer is, what, 130?
Yes.
So is Davis. So is Davis. So I don't see where he can make. He doesn't generate enough money to really to supplement that loss. If that's going to be a, you know, if he's not going to take that, so I don't know.
Bob, let me ask you: when was the last time when you were a professional that you made $2 million for one fight?
Oh, just last weekend. Yeah. Those offers just keep coming. I tell you what, like, I got more metal in me than most people, but you offer me $2 million, I'll fight anybody tomorrow.
Exactly.
Anybody.
Exactly. People
I'll
give two or three weight classes for that.
I'll gain weight, cut weight, $2 million. Damn it.
Yeah, and the reason I brought that up was that Bell – the UFC fighter that had his nose broken in so many places that they were having problems putting it back together, claims that he hasn't made enough money and that he's broke and can't get his nose fixed. Is that normal for that level of a UFC boxing, Bob?
No, we get treated even less or worse. And that brings me back to professional football. You know what I mean? You know, all the guys back in the day played it forever and made some smart investments. Then you jump forward however many years. Now, we need football retirement because we don't know how to manage our money. All
right.
Yeah. You know what I mean? I mean, you're going into a fight. It's not a knitting class. Okay? Stuff is going to happen. If you don't have some medical or some dental on the back burner, and that's one thing, you know, going into the fight sport, I was, you know, a redneck, you know, growing up in the country. I did it for my shot. You know, there's a lot of people that go in there, oh, this is my shot. I'm a tough guy. I can make money. I'm not too brilliant. I can get in there and use my body. But, you know, you got to have a backup with some medical and stuff. And if you're getting paid cash money for fights and you don't have enough to fix your own broken nose, you have bad spending habits. That's all there is to it. You know, UFC fighters, you know, I mean, I got paid more back in the day because there was less of us. And then it got really diluted after 2006 when I had my gym, my beginning pro, a guy would go pro and be lucky to pull 300 and 300, you know, three to show, three to win. And that's not worth it to me. You know, I mean, the MMA guys aren't, you know, you can get to the top. You can be your Conor McGregor, your Ronda Rousey, your John Jones. But those are the only ones that are really skimming off the top. Everyone else is fighting for pennies. The smart ones, Forrest Griffin, you know, was a police officer. And he's got some stuff behind him. So Steepy's a fire department, you know, works for the fire department. Yeah. You got to have a backup plan. When I had my gym, I told all my kids, stay in school. Don't make the mistakes I did. Do this as a hobby. And if the right fight, the right timing, the right thing falls in your lap, eat it up. You know, ride that roller coaster for as long as it's going to go. Had some good talks back in the day with Shane Carwin about that. You know, good dude.
Okay.
You know, we were both in Colorado there for a while, and he's a native, and, you know, he's one of, outside myself and my coaches, one of my favorite fighters because he's smart. You know, he rode that ride, mm-hmm. but he was an engineer his whole career.
Yeah.
And always mm-hmm. got to go back to that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Hey, there was one other thing I wanted to ask you, Z. Billy Joe Saunders signed with Matchroom to do a multi-fight promotional contract. Given the fact that he's been quiet for the last three quarters of a year, you think they're going to find somebody that's going to want to fight him?
Not if they're going to have to go to that promotion exclusively.
Mm-hmm.
If they're going to have to
right.
go to that exclusively, no, he's not.
Mm-hmm.
Billy Joe, ever since he got caught with the PED and
right.
he has not made it to the middleweight division since then, he's kind of lost
mm-hmm.
lost credibility.
Mm-hmm.
Just as a fighter, he's lost credibility. I mean, now you have a fighter who was fighting at 160, going all day long, just cardio all day, moving around, just, you know, all day long. Since his sharp is,
mm-hmm.
you don't know what. Now he served this PED thing after talking about Canelo. You know, he gets caught, served his little bit of time, but he can't go back down to 160.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you do fight at 170, or fight at light heavyweight, you're fighting maybe like the last time I saw it, fighting a guy that's not really on your near your level. So I mean, as far
right.
as Billy Joe goes, I need to see how his rededication to the game, to the competition. If he's not
mm-hmm.
rededicating himself fully, then you know he wasn't hitting hard. He wasn't the hardest hitting guy at 160. So I mean.
Right.
What's he going to tell a person at 175, 168?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if he can make
mm-hmm.
168, I mean that's
mm-hmm.
him right now. He has to. He's doing stuff I see to rebrand himself. But you're going to
mm-hmm.
need to see credible competition. You're going to need to see credible competition at whatever weight you are for you to get your name back. He's going to need to see credible competition.
Mm-hmm. Chris.
Well, I think if Saunders comes off of his feet and gets flat-footed in the ring and goes for power punching, I think that the excess weight that he's picked up, I think he'll become a hard puncher. I think he can step it up a little bit. I thought he danced around too much, took a lot away from his he took a lot away from his punch. But I think
mm-hmm.
If he got a little heavier, came down off his toes, got flat-footed, I think he would punch harder, and maybe not in combination with great speed, but he would punch a lot harder, and I think he can make the difference up because that light heavyweight division is tough, and
mm-hmm.
There's some good
mm-hmm.
people in it, and there's some money to be made
mm-hmm.
there,
yeah.
but
mm-hmm.
he could make it. He could make money at that weight. I think he'd be
mm-hmm.
formidable myself. He's such a great boxer at 160. But, you know, he wasn't, like you say, he wasn't a puncher. But I think
right.
the added weight and the added muscle, I think he will become a hard puncher. But he didn't add any
mm-hmm.
fat on the last time I saw him. He didn't
mm-hmm.
get fat. He just got bigger, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it was – but I like him. I like his style. I think he's a hell of a fighter. But, you know,
mm-hmm.
now that he's going into the light heavyweight division, basically, he's got a lot of good fights, a lot of tough fights ahead of him if he wants them. Yeah. You know?
Sure.
That's a hell of a division. So we'll
yeah.
see what happens. You know, 168, if he's getting too big for 168, he's really taking a step up into the danger zone.
Mm-hmm.
That's a tough damn division.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll see what
mm-hmm.
happens. You know, it'd be nice to watch
sure.
him and see where he goes. Be interesting.
Yeah. Well, guys, we're just right up on the timeline here, and Bob, I want to thank you again for coming on, and you add so much to the program by bringing in the UFC and the MMA news, and we really appreciate all the background you do. Chris, you're always you're
Dr. Chris, you know everybody. It's awesome talking with you guys.
Yeah. Great. All right. Yeah, Chris, we really appreciate all that you do to add to this program, and you know, the fact that you have been there and you've done everything and you've been a Hall of Famer. We really appreciate all the input that you have. Z, when it comes down to, like I've always said, when it comes down to breaking down the fighter or the fights, I always go to you first, because I know that you're a student of the, you're a teacher of the art, you're a student of the art, and I know that you and Ty and Coach Mel used to sit and watch fights all the time and talk about it. It's just a pleasure to be with you guys each and every week. I want to thank all of you. And
all right,
Z, you want to lead us out? Okay,
thank
Chris, I'll give you a call later on.
Okay, see you guys.
Hey,
take care.
See you, everybody.
Thanks, Bob.
Take it easy.
Take care.
Yeah, I want to thank Bob. I want to thank Dr. Chris. I want to thank you, Butch. I want to thank all my Fighting Words family. These shows are definitely in memory of Bob and Coach Mel. And if anyone wants to hear any Fighting Words, please do call. Butch?
Great. Ladies and gentlemen, these programs are brought to you each and every day of the week in grateful appreciation to the men and women of the United States Armed Forces and the men and women of Police and Fire Services. When you're out there and you see somebody in uniform, please acknowledge them. They're very, very tough times, both domestically and in foreign lands. These programs are dedicated to those who lost their lives in the line of duty. Deputy Robert Carroll, Patrolman David Curtis, Patrolman Jeffrey Colcap, Sergeant Thomas Batinger, Patrolman Jeffrey Yazwit, Detective Randy Bell, Detective Ricky Childers, San Diego Officer Mike Henler, Lieutenant Mike Zerba, Newcastle County Police, Patrolman and Officer Chris in Lakeland PD, Chief Al Hogo, Longwood Key Police Department, Chief Jimmy Ford, Wilmington Fire Department, Highway Patrolman Alonzo Moses, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Lazaro, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Murphy, Plymouth Township PA Highway Patrol, Lieutenant Bob Neary, Philadelphia Fire Department, Sergeant Mike Wilson, Charlotte County Sheriff's Office, Deputy Chief Mike Godwin, Philadelphia Fire Department, Deputy Jonathan Scott Pine, Orange County Sheriff's Department, Patrolman Robert Germain, Windermere, Florida Police Department, Trooper Chelsea Richards, Florida Highway Patrol, Lieutenant Joyce Craig Lewis, Philadelphia Fire Department, Patrolman Charlie Condit, Tarpon Springs Police Department, Patrol Deputy Charlie Kotloff, Hillsborough County Deputy Sheriff, Delaware State Trooper Sergeant Rodney Bond, Captain Chris Leach, Wilmington Fire Department, Lieutenant Jerry Ficus, Wilmington Fire Department, Lieutenant Ardith Hope, Wilmington Fire Department, F.D. Lee, Special Inspector Vinny Galaccio, Delaware State Trooper Corporal Stephen Ballard, Kissimmee Patrol Officer Matt Baxter, Kissimmee Sergeant Sam Howard, Captain Matt Letourneau, Philadelphia Fire Department, Deputy Bill Gentry, Highlands County Sheriff's Department, Deputy Clay Zerba, Clay County Sheriff's Department, Deputy Natalie Corona, L.A. County Sheriff's Department, Deputy April Rodriguez, Pasco County Deputy Sheriff, and Officer Robert McKetchin, Biloxi, Kentucky Police Department. My brothers and sisters, although we may be 10-7 at this point in time, at some time we'll be 10-10 at the table of the Lord. Until that time, may the roads raise up to meet you. May the winds be always at your back. May the rains fall softly on your fields, and the sunshine lightly on your face. Until we meet again, may the good Lord keep you and your families always in the hallow of his hands. Good night, God bless, and have a great week.
Shem alek ma yilama, shem ahezahir ma, son ashen evorat fet hakuig again ma
Yeah.
a fiery blade engaged to lead. He'd break the bravest in the field.
All units be advised, 1999's response was last emergency. May God rest his soul.
Good night, Bob. We love you and we miss you.